I'm Mallory Rubin.
And I'm Van Lathan.
Check out the Ringerverse podcast from The Ringer for all things superhero movies, nerd culture, and fandom entertainment.
We have instant reviews and fun takes on all the latest news and more, available now on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Max. The new HBO original limited series, The Sympathizer, is an espionage thriller and cross-culture satire that follows a communist spy during the final days of the Vietnam War and his new life as a refugee in Los Angeles, from executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., and based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, The Sympathizer, is streaming now exclusively on Max. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast and Ringer SC. I'm Misa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm right, thanks, man. How are you?
Very, very, very well indeed.
You recovered from our day out on Saturday.
Big day out, exactly. That is great. That was really nice.
For those who don't know, Misa and I went to Wolfsburg on Saturday for the second leg of the Champions League against Barcelona. It was a great day.
It was absolutely lovely, yeah. Really enjoyed it. Great vibe, great atmosphere.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. First of all, we hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Obviously, getting vaccinated if you can, getting that booster if you can. Do we have to keep saying that?
I think so. I hope everyone who's got access to it and who can take it has taken it. I hope so. Just because I want everyone to be, you know, stay well.
Yeah, we do want everyone to stay well.
Yeah.
Eid Mubarak to everyone celebrating today.
Yes, yes.
We hope everyone who has been fasting over the last month enjoys a happy and healthy Eid. Couple of other bits of admin. There'll be some pieces going up on theringer.com/soccer this week. There's Champions League second legs, men's Champions League second legs this week as well. You might have a few stadios this week. We might record after each Champions League night and then Friday morning after the Europa League and Conference League stuff.
It's a lot of huge football this week.
Yeah, there's no Wrighty's House as well. So we thought maybe we'll hit you with a few more stadios because no one wants it.
They're going to get it.
But yeah, other than that, if you do listen to us on a podcast app that allows you to rate and review, please do so. It'd be very kind. And Stadio Outros plays on Spotify. All the music we play on each episode, newest ones at the top, just search for Stadio Outros. So today, we're going to talk about the Women's Champions League second legs. Trabzonspor winning their first league title in 38 years. Carlo Ancelotti becoming the first manager to win the league in all top five European leagues. Real Madrid clinched the title. We'll do a quick kind of like roundup of Premier League and the Bundesliga. I reckon that might do us for today.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's get into it after this. All right, man. So the big showdown will be in Turin. The most narrative of Champions League finals.
Peak narrative.
It will be Barcelona against Lyon in Turin for the Women's Champions League final. Barcelona progressing despite a 2-0 defeat to Wolfsburg, which we were at, as we mentioned, and we will talk about. And Lyon going through after seeing off PSG in the second leg in the Parc des Princes. 2-1, scoring the night. 5-3 on aggregate. Both ties 5-3 on aggregate, which I thought was just nice. Just a nice symmetry.
Yep.
Lyon returning to their first Champions League final since they last won the competition 2 years ago. Barcelona knocked them off their perch last year.
And how?
We were at Wolfsburg on Saturday. It took place in the Volkswagen Arena, the main stadium, and it was a record domestic attendance for a women's German football game.
Yep.
22,000 were there. In Paris, the same, 43,255. And also, over the weekend, record attendances for the Women's National League in England.
Oh.
Newcastle United had 22,134 in the first women's game at St. James's Park. Bear in mind, this was a day after the men's team played there against Liverpool as well. Absolutely unbelievable.
That's incredible.
So we were at Wolfsburg. They won 2-0. Two great goals, actually. And to be honest, they could have done more. This was the first time that Barcelona haven't won a game, not even lost a game, haven't won a game this season.
Was in 45 matches, I think. They won 44 straight before this
44
one.
Straight, yeah.
Wow.
And Jill Roord mentioned it after the game when she was interviewed. She scored a great goal, actually, Jill Roord. And she said, that first leg, we didn't play like ourselves. That's the problem for Wolfsburg. Much of it was lost in that first leg, the 5-1 in Camp Nou, which you can understand with over 90,000 people there, it could be quite an overwhelming experience. But Wolfsburg are a better football team than they showed themselves to be in the first leg.
I think this 90,000 crowd thing, do you know what? I'm going to be a bit harsh. I don't buy it. Do you know why? That can't alone be the reason. Because they have players in that squad who've played in front of huge crowds, players who played at World Cups. They've got huge... I think it was more the absences. The absence of Oberdorf was big, for sure.
Yeah, it's a massive.
And I think...
And Eva Payor being rushed back from injury. Well, not maybe rushed back, but returning from injury sooner than most people thought she would do.
Dare I say it as well, because we saw nerves in the second leg, actually.
Yeah.
We saw nerves in the second leg. So I almost wonder if... It wasn't so much Barcelona, it was the occasion itself, like, you know, a Champions League semi. And maybe Wolfsburg, if I'm honest with you, I don't know if they fully owned it. When I saw them in the first leg, I thought to myself, this is a team that's playing as if it's still lucky to be here. It's not playing with the swagger. You know, like, there's a turning point in Wolfsburg's season we've talked about many times in the Champions League group stages, I think, against Chelsea, when Chelsea kind of imploded and Wolfsburg were like, hang on a minute. And actually Chelsea, you know, Wolfsburg's form in the league and in the Champions League just went upwards at that point. This was the first time, the first leg, we'll get, you know, we'll brush over this sec. The first leg, the 5-1 loss was the first time I'd seen the early season Wolfsburg. We mentioned before Obidor's absence for two legs. I think that's absolutely huge for them. I think I think this doesn't happen. I don't think they lose like this in the first leg if Oberdorf's there. And the impressive thing about this game was, once they realised where they could make gains, once Svenja Huth started taking her time in possession and playing like she's played all year, once they started releasing Jon Stottir down the flanks, they just could not cope. Actually, the Barca coach after the game was interesting. He was like, first half, they didn't really press us much. And we were like, okay, fine. So the second leg, we kind of like, not took it easy, but didn't think they'd come at us. And they were ferocious after the break. And they stepped up in that period. And, you know, there's a lot to be said. Like, Barca did have a 5-1 lead. So there was an element of maybe playing.
They were a little bit more passive than
to be fair. Maybe they were playing in slightly, I wouldn't say second gear, but maybe playing in third gear, I would say.
But they did this last season when they beat Man City in the first leg 3-0 and then just kind of chilled in the second.
Right. Yeah, it's understandable. You've got a 4-goal lead. But what I would say was, from about 25 minutes in, it felt like Wolfsburg started putting the heat on them in interesting areas.
Yeah, because right at the beginning, Wolfsburg just looked terrified.
Yeah.
And it came within the first 90 seconds where Cross came in, and then Caroline Graham Hansen, obviously former Wolfsburg player, just sent everyone scrambling in their own box. But then after that, Wolfsburg broke through that Barcelona midfield, and you could see them kind of think, oh shit, actually, we've got the players to hurt them.
Yeah.
And then they did that thing where they recycled possession out wide. And Payor had the header? Or was it Wasmut? I can't remember which player had the header, but it was... They could have scored from it, basically. And that was within the first couple of minutes. But then it took Wolfsburg until, I think, Jill Roord's shot, I think it was just after half an hour, was the first shot they had on target.
Yeah, the one that kind of like set the tone.
Yeah, and then just after half time, Tobias Wasmut hit that shot into the bottom corner that was checked for VAR and given, and then Jill Roord made it too. And they pushed Barca. They could have had another, a little bit more composure, especially with that final ball. And they could have put Barca under genuine pressure. I think it would have been extremely difficult to overturn that deficit. But you did see Barca starting to look a bit nervy, actually, when that second one went in.
Yeah.
Because, and I think this is the problem quite often with Barca, and we've talked about this as well with Leon in the past, that it's almost like teams go out there expecting to play 12 or 13 players because they are so good that this fear kicks in whenever you get the ball, and you're almost expecting to be beaten. And imagine playing a side in the second leg of Champions League semi-final that has won 44 straight games against some very, very good teams. The psychological effect going into that must be huge. If teams disrespect Barca a little bit more than they do, you see Barca get shifted out of their rhythm.
There's two key problems. You've mentioned this and you're absolutely right. And there were two areas where I saw this being a problem and where Wolfsburg became calmer as the game went on. The first one was in front of their own area. So there was one point where a Wolfsburg player gets the ball. I think it was Svenja Huth, and she goes across the top of her box and she is like, she suddenly realizes that she's like running square across the face of her own box and that she's being pressed. Now, she had passing options, but there was almost like, do I release it here and like it get like intercepted, or do I pass, or do I hold on to it and get pressed out of possession? You could see like the decision making. Then she basically played like not the best pass, but it was okay and got out of trouble. And the next moment I saw was when Wolfsburg were attacking, and it was a sign of a team that's not expecting to get regular counter-attacking opportunities. Mm. And they were snatching at their decision-making. And a couple of times in the first half, they break really, really well. And there's a pass on and they don't make it. And the gap closes. And that is a thing that after about half an hour, they really calmed down. I'm like, hang on a minute. We can actually get through this high line quite regularly. And I would say that the main player that was standing between them and I think overrunning that was Bonmati. Actually, I thought Bonmati had a brilliant first half. Again, brilliant. Retaining possession and tempo.
She was player of the game.
I thought she was excellent. And she kept her level, actually. Patelis was slightly quiet, I have to say. Wolfsburg showed, you know, we said before that this was the matchup that we thought could maybe hurt Barcelona the most and ask the most questions. And, you know, I think we both stand by that, really.
It was always going to be a tough ask from Wolfsburg, but I think one of the great things about this, there was a real sense of occasion there.
Mm.
You know, much like in the Parc des Princes and much like St. James's Park this weekend, record attendances broken all the way throughout the season around multiple leagues, multiple competitions. And you could actually feel that in the stadium. And this is why I think this kind of visibility is so important, because you had a load of really young girls in that stadium who were watching women playing in the Volkswagen Arena in a Champions League semi-final, and it was loud in there. We grew up completely normalized to seeing men playing in sellout stadiums on TV, right? Young girls haven't had that. The women who are playing Champions League now didn't have that.
Mm.
They didn't have that. Even Jill Roard said on Wrighty's House that playing in front of over 90,000 people in Camp Nou came probably sooner than even she thought. She didn't really think that she would get to do that in her career. And this is why this kind of stuff is so important.
Yeah.
I would just recommend anyone who has the opportunity to go to these games, go. Tickets are so often way more affordable. The atmosphere is, without sounding patronizing, but it's usually more wholesome. And it's just, you really get the sense that you're kind of being a part of something that is genuinely really important.
Yeah, and also I would say as well, you're seeing teams that are going to be regarded in history.
Mm.
Like, we're very, very fortunate to have these particular teams. Like, you know, some years, you know, like you look at the Champions League, you go through cycles, you see it in the men's game. There's actually some years, to be honest, where the Champions League winners aren't vintage. No. Where they win and you're like, actually, these aren't teaching us anything about football. Not to name names, but there are some clubs, they win titles and you're like, actually, they haven't taught us anything new about football. The teams currently winning and getting to the final are like all-time great sides. And if you can get to watch them live, you will absolutely not regret it.
No, yeah, so absolutely.
Please get yourselves down if you can.
Quick shout about Wolfsburg. We got to finally meet in person the great Jasmina Schreimler.
That was so lovely, her and her family.
And her mum and her brother.
Yeah, it was such a joy. Absolute joy.
Shouts to the Schreimler family.
What a great writer. She was doing was it radio she was doing?
Yeah, she was doing radio commentary for that. The Wolfsburg Dawn.
Love her work.
Yeah, for those who don't follow Jasmina, at Jas Schreimler on Twitter. She's a great follow on German women's football specifically, but just women's football in general.
Yeah. One of the best.
In Paris, there was an amazing Ada Hegerberg moment.
That whole, everything about that moment is amazing, actually.
14 minutes in, Ada Hegerberg with an unbelievable header.
If you see the depth on that, like the depth on that cross, the execution of that.
Oh,
this cross travels from a different postcode almost. Yeah, it's a deep, deep cross. And the angle she gets back and across the keeper is unreal, but that's not even the best part of this, is it? Because you're going to give us the...
Hegerberg does one of the most, like, she does the cup in the air and then she bangs the Leon badge and does the whole, like, this is my house, like, this is my pitch kind of
big main character
celebration,
energy. Yeah,
pointing.
Yeah.
I love angry Ada Hegerberg. When she's playing angry, she is like, I mean, she's a problem anyway, but she had this huge injury, Ada Hegerberg. And we were talking about this on the way home with, shouts to Joel, Storm Warnings on Twitter.
Yes, yes.
Stadio listener that we bumped into and got the train back. And we were talking about this on the way home, about how because of the increased visibility over the last couple of years of the women's game, it's coincided at a time where Hegerberg has had this huge injury.
Mm.
And she's now come back this season, started scoring goals, and she started to hit full fitness and full ferocity at a point where she's going into the Champions League final, you know, and Lyon are top of the league as well in France. They could win the league. They could win the Champions League because we haven't seen these two, Barcelona and Lyon, face up against each other in their current guises. So it's a little bit of an unknown.
It is, very much so, yeah.
But she looks
she's like locked in.
She's on a mission and she's back. And she is I constantly say this is like my Brazil story, but the Champions League final 2019, Lyon against Barcelona, is Ada Hegerberg is put in one of the most dominant performances I've ever seen from a single player on a football pitch in person.
This is the thing about Lyon, isn't it? Like, they are, I know we don't like to use, you know, pop culture analogies in this podcast, but it reminds me of the bit when Alfred said, when he first saw Bane fighting, and he said, "I see the League of Shadows resurgent." And I'm like, I really feel like Lyon, I feel like they fell out of, not popular consciousness for a while, but I feel like people, I certainly was like, you know, is there a kind of period of like relative decline where other teams are now assuming, and not just Barcelona, maybe one or two other teams are kind of nudging their way ahead of Lyon in that pecking order. They are absolutely back, not just in the final, but in that style.
Mm. Well, I wrote the piece after the last Champions League win a couple of years ago for The Ringer.
About the shift.
When they won the five straight, and it was just like, this might be the last one. And obviously Barcelona then won it the following year. If Lyon beat Barcelona in this final, this is going to shift the top of women's football off its axis ever so slightly.
Again,
because
yeah.
Everything has been geared up for Barcelona to be the next dynastic team. And that's what makes this final so intriguing.
Yeah, the finals in Turin, as you said, Lyon, Barcelona, or Barcelona, Lyon. And that is truly exciting, actually.
I can't wait, man. It's going to be amazing. Very quickly in the Women's Super League, it's as you were at the top, although Arsenal beat Villa 7-0 and Chelsea scraped through against Birmingham City 1-0, which means that Arsenal have shifted to a better goal difference now. Plus 50 is their goal difference over Chelsea's plus 49. They're 4 points behind Chelsea with a game in hand. There's the North London Derby this Wednesday. We'll talk about that on Stadio. So if they win that, they're a point behind heading into the final game. And it just gives Chelsea a little less wiggle room.
It asks the question, definitely. Definitely asks the question.
I mean, I still think they've got enough to come through and win that league, but rather intriguing. Elsewhere, there were absolute scenes in the Women's Championship,
yes,
which we just have to talk about quickly.
Yes, yes.
So Coventry United were deducted 10 points early on in the season. They were bottom of the table, minus 4 points, 10 points behind Watford, who were above them in the table. And then in the 97th minute of their final game of the season against Watford,
incredible,
Molly Green pinged a free kick in.
Ripped it from like 35 yards?
Unbelievable. A solid 35 yards.
Solid.
Top left-hand corner. Won the game for Coventry United. Sent Watford down. Kept Coventry United in the Women's Championship, which is unbelievable.
The celebrations, the scenes. You know, the astonishing about this one was, you know, like, you know, there are free kicks that are in the moment they're struck.
Oh my God.
Who's that commentator who said, it's hit and it stays hit? That one stayed hit. That was an interstellar object that broke free of all like gravity. It's like that.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But yeah, what a weekend for women's football.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very much so.
Let's take a quick break and we're going to come back with some other stuff.
Let's do it.
Just before we move on, for those who haven't seen it, football super agent Mino Raiola sadly passed away on Saturday morning. His family announced he was only 54 years old.
No age at all.
Was one of the most influential people in world football,
yep,
if you think about it.
Yeah.
Erling Haaland, Paul Pogba, Matthias de Ligt,
Balotelli,
Pavel Nedved back in the day, Zlatan.
When I saw the news of his passing, I had a couple of thoughts. And the first was, this person absolutely went all the way in for his players. The other thing I was also like, he really backed them. Like there's a few moves that Raiola players made that didn't work out, but they were like big moves. And it was more like, he'd put you on the bigger stages and be like, look, I trust you to deliver. And if I have any sort of, if there's any sadness about some of the Raiola transfers, it was like the kind of platforms he gave to those players, like, you know, the Mkhitaryan transfer, United, obviously, and Pogba. There are ones where I was like, I really hope this works, because you saw from the way that his clients talked about him that they felt this person has my best interests. And that's the thing, you know, you don't often hear different players or different approaches, but he was definitely someone that players came out and were like, this person's got my interest. You know, we know what football, we know how tough that world can be. And we know that you need people who are tough to have your spot. Obviously extremely a divisive figure, but also a figure who did something new, to be honest.
Looked after his players, man.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Thoughts with his friends, family, loved ones. Very sad news.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to Spain?
Let's do it.
For all the talk this weekend of grumpy ex-player pundit saying, oh, they celebrated like they won the league.
Oh, that's
someone who celebrated like they won the league was Carlo Ancelotti in sunglasses and with a cigar sticking out of his mouth.
Don Ancelotti is one of my favourite Ancelottis.
Don Carlo became the first manager to win the league title in each of the top five European leagues. He won Serie A with Milan, Liga with PSG. He won the Bundesliga with Bayern Munich. He won the Premier League with Chelsea. And he's now on La Liga with Real Madrid, which eluded him in his first stint, despite bringing them to La Decima. They kind of cruised it in the end.
They did.
I remember when we were talking about La Liga at the beginning of the season, we were a little bit worried about the state of the league as a whole. I think rightly so as well, because there were a lot of clubs that were in a little bit of a transition, or looked like they were about to step into a transition.
Mm.
Coming off the back of the Atleti title win last season, I reiterated this point a couple of weeks ago, and I reiterated it again, and this is, I think, to probably enhance what Real Madrid have done this season. I think Atleti had the best squad in terms of numbers and depth to retain La Liga this season. On paper, at the beginning of the season, Real Madrid had the best 11 when everyone was fit. That goes to show how good an achievement that actually is this season. Because, yes, they're still Real Madrid. And yes, they obviously still have a huge advantage financially over quite a number of teams in La Liga. But you've seen how poorly Barcelona have managed that. You've seen how Atleti have underperformed this season, and Real Madrid just kept it moving. They kept it moving all season. And I was thinking about this. That's the way that I would explain Carlo Ancelotti's management style. We just keep it moving.
Absolutely.
I think he's managed it really well this season. Because if you think about it, can you remember a huge amount of drama coming out of Real Madrid this season?
Can you remember a huge amount of drama coming out of any Ancelotti dressing room? This is the thing. This is the thing that makes him so special. Look, this man has won three Champions Leagues alongside Zidane. Like, he's won three. And one of the things that's so impressive about him is he has no regard for apparent seniority. He had Eden Hazard in his dressing room, Isco, Gareth Bale, and Asensio. And he overlooked them all at key points of the season to bring in players like Rodrigo and give them roles. He was unafraid to make huge subs early in the game at halftime. Big changes, not just for injury, but because of tactical reasons. He's unafraid to be like, you're out, you're in. The use of Camavinga, understanding that Camavinga can't necessarily control games from the very start consistently, bring him in for the last 20 minutes, half an hour, but also getting him to buy into that.
Mm.
This is really, really impressive. Like, everyone, and Nacho as well, Nacho contributing key minutes from the bench. And Lucas Vasquez is a right back. We saw that under Zidane, but just getting everyone to buy into the Madrid ethos. And there is a Madrid ethos. There is an ethos of a kind of, it's a weird thing because they're like a very, Madrid are a strange one because they're an absolute sort of white collar aristocratic club almost, but they really pride themselves on this work ethic, you know, sort of overalls. We don't care how it looks. We get the thing done. Madrid, and I'm not trying to, this is not a disrespectful thing. It's more like the aesthetics of this aren't that important. What's important is, again, the Ancelotti thing, we keep it moving. So this league title, they kind of love the fact that they ground it out. I think they love the fact that they bit back a bit. Like the Courtois quote about some people, when they won the Clásico, thought that was the league title, but there was still football to play.
Yep.
When you hear quotes like that, you're like, there's so much needle in this Madrid dressing room, and there's a lot of pride, and I'll say this, I could not accuse them the last two seasons of complacency. Like, for them, they should never have pushed Atleti as close as they did. The state of transition they were in, considering.
Last year?
Yeah, last year. They shouldn't have. They could do the double. They could easily do the league and Champions League double.
Which I think this is what gives it an extra bit of gloss. They've won La Liga with games to spare.
Mm.
It's not really been in any doubt for a long while.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet they're in the Champions League semi-final and there's only a goal in it, and they could overturn that deficit and progress to the Champions League final.
I genuinely think Ancelotti must come up as one of the most beloved managers. When people talk about him in conversation, his name must come up all the time.
I don't think many people would have said at the beginning of the season Real Madrid would have the league wrapped up with a few games to go and be in with a shout of making it to the Champions League final ahead of the second leg.
Do you know what it is as well? What's really striking?
If someone had said that to you at the beginning of the season, I don't think a lot of people would have thought.
And what's got me about that as well is key players all playing to their potential. That's the thing. He has absolutely maximized. Like when you saw, you know, Rodrigo, it was quite fitting to have Rodrigo coming in and scoring in the first couple against Espanyol to like take, you know, to seal the win, the league win. And obviously the, you know, the rise of Vinicius and Rodrigo started under Zidane, but the way that Ancelotti just continued that and created even better chemistry as time's gone on, it's just, you know, there were times, and this is not to knock Zidane too much, there were just times under Zidane, and I know it's transitional squad, where we felt like the team was almost different segments. Whereas I look at this team and feel like it's coherent. The team has just evolved. There's something quite old school about that, isn't there? Just going into a dressing room, looking at all the parts and assembling them and maximising them.
Yeah, Ancelotti is essentially like the granddad who can look after all 8 grandkids in one day and they are all immaculately behaved, but they actually still have a bit of fun. The parents and the uncles and aunties and stuff are in the kitchen doing Christmas dinner or whatever.
Yeah.
And they come back in the lounge and they're like, how has Grandpa Carlo got them all so chill?
Yeah.
That's what he's like. That's exactly his energy.
Perfect.
And he's amazing. We've always been massive fans of Carlo Ancelotti. I know that a lot of people will look at and say, well, you know, you won the league with Bayern, cool. Oh, you won the league with PSG, awesome. But some managers haven't. And to do it everywhere, especially if you think back to those early days when he was Juve manager and the stick that he got in Italy after that, his career has been laced with an obscene amount of disrespect for someone who is so affable.
You know, it's funny as well. There's a lot of talk about how the modern player needs this treatment, that treatment. Like, hang on a minute. Ancelotti's of the generation of, you know, he's of a different generation. And he's just not had a problem with handling players.
Him blowing his tee after Everton scored a really important goal while everyone is losing their fucking mind behind him. The casual look to the assistant referee to see if it was offside. And just, he's more worried about cooling his tee down. I love him so much.
Absolutely amazing, yeah. Can I just say, the Ancelotti sacking by Chelsea is still one of the most existential sackings I've ever seen. It's just like, we just feel
we
should do this.
Because Chelsea fans will come for you. So congrats to Real Madrid. Congrats to Carlo.
Yes.
On the other side of Madrid, though, things are not happy.
They are not.
Atletico Madrid lost to Athletic Club.
Iñaki Williams, masterclass.
From Iñaki.
I think it was our first one, Hermoso own goal, I think they gave it to in the end.
Oh, did they?
I think so in the end, yeah, the deflection. Oh, but yeah, the second was all his. A Panenka over Oblak is so disrespectful.
Yeah, although a kind of driven Panenka. It's
disrespectful though.
Some quotes from Oblak after the game. If only we knew where the problem is and then we could resolve it. I don't understand why in the dressing room everything is perfect. But then we come out and in the 5th minute we have 2 yellows. It's difficult. I'll tell you why, Jan. Because you're fucking Atleti.
Oh no.
That's why.
The suffering.
That's why.
But that's interesting that he says that the dressing room is a happy place. I mean, nobody said this before about Simeone having like a number 2, like when Ferguson got one. I really think that's...
Yeah, I mean, having Nelson Vivas as your number 2, it doesn't strike me as the most calming choice.
Right. I just think...
You know what I mean?
I just think, I mean...
This is a man who ripped his own shirt off, buttons and all, and took it off whilst managing in Argentina, you know, because whilst getting sent off. Like, this guy is not, you know, he isn't...
Not the ambassador of chill. He's not.
No, he's not.
Do you know what I mean about the number 2 for Simeone? I mean, I doubt he'll ever do it. And I'm not sure that he'll do that before he leaves. But I feel like it needs that second pair of eyes there.
Get Diego Costa in.
Oh, come on. There you are. Oh, let's have more chill. Oh, let's do... Ryan.
He's a changed man. There was a couple of other quotes from Jan Oblak, which I thought were really interesting. I can't find the answers to what is happening. It's something that since I've been here hasn't happened. My colleagues have desire, personality, but I don't know why that doesn't show on the pitch sometimes. I don't know what's happening.
Feels ominous.
We're recording this ahead of Getafe against Real Betis. If Betis win that, they're a point behind Atleti with 4 games to go for the final Champions League spot. Atleti have to be extremely careful.
They do.
Because they are running the risk of not making Champions League this season.
They're slipping. And the performances have not been impressive. They've been uneven, so yeah.
Before we move on, we have to give a massive shout out to Trabzonspor, who won their first Turkish league title.
38 years.
For 38 years. And the scenes there were absolutely incredible. I don't know if any of you follow Eli Mengem on Instagram, but he was there.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And he was on the pitch at the end of the game and filming. And I DM'd him in response to one of them just being like, this is unbelievable. And he said, dude, it was so wild everywhere that I had to finally stop filming at like 5 a.m.
Ellie's one of the best sports documentary makers anywhere. Best doing it, so.
Yeah, he's a don. Shouts to Ellie. So they sealed it with a 2-2 draw at home to Antalyaspor. The best thing about this, I thought, was that the fans kind of were a bit too keen.
Well, the pitch invasion.
They came on the pitch and the ref was just like, no, we're not finished. So they all had to just like scatter again. The game was completed shortly after and then everyone was just...
It was incredible to see. Yeah.
It was amazing. The dancing from fans on the pitch. Do you know what was really interesting as well? Just in various parts of Germany, because obviously Germany has such a huge Turkish population here. There were celebrations everywhere. There was fireworks going off in various German cities. There were like people out on the streets, like with Trabzonspor flags.
There was a tweet actually about a particular city, wasn't it? There was a tweet about that. And then someone said, oh, it looks like Trabzonspor won the league then. And it was like,
Cologne? I think it was Cologne. Was it Cologne? I think it was Archie were in touch that with that Cologne, sense, I think. Yeah. An amazing achievement for them and an amazing occasion. I was reading some stuff about how the population of the city had like just almost like tripled because fans from all over the province kind of came into the city and they'd set up big screens in their old stadium, which is like a public park. And everywhere after the game, there was like fireworks, pyro going off everywhere and flares. And there was, it just basically was turned into this big carnival.
It looks like one of the most hype league titles I think I've seen in a very long time. Like, you know, there were particular moments, you talked about this before, like when Cleveland won the NBA title and that was a particularly special victory, or when Philadelphia won the Super Bowl. There's certain victories for a city that mean more. You know what I mean? Mm. And this is going to be on the list of, like, in terms of celebrations I've seen, this is definitely up there with a trophy that really has a wider significance. So yeah, many congratulations to them. They've still got a pop at the Turkish League and Cup double.
They do. It's really interesting because they were the first side, Trabzonspor, for those who don't know, who broke the kind of Istanbul monopoly on the league title when they won it back in
late 70s.
76. And then that, like, they went on this like run after that of like dominating the league, and then after 1984 haven't won it since. So it's just amazing, man. Who knows? Imagine if it kicks off like a
dynasty.
Yeah. Who knows? Let's quickly go to the Premier League because there were big wins down the bottom of the table. First of all, from one vibey manager to another one, Roy Hodgson in sunglasses.
Such a mood.
They lost 2-1 to Burnley. This Burnley side are on an absolute tear. 3 straight wins and then a draw against West Ham. They've got Villa at home next. They are now level on points with Leeds, who have been dragged back down into that relegation battle after their defeat to Man City. Massive win for Burnley. And then you're looking at Everton after that and you're thinking, they have to win against Chelsea.
Yeah.
And they did. Thanks to a Richarlison goal. And there was a really good piece that Jonathan Liu wrote for The Guardian about Everton, how Goodison is going to be super important for them if they're going to stay up. And on Sunday, you saw a prime example of why.
The atmosphere at Goodison's always been one of the things that's really made Everton a tough prospect. What I would say about this was, and this is no disrespect to Everton, Pickford was outstanding in goal for them, and who's just been...
He really was. That save, really that impressive double, key points. The one that came off the post.
Yeah. The thing is, he's smart enough to make saves like that. We've seen him make... The Jorginho one we talk about many times, saving that penalty in the Euros. Like, he's clever enough to make those adjustments. There's no surprise if he's done that on purpose. What I would say on Chelsea, who again, unimpressive, there was a stat that was put out about Mason Mount leading Chelsea in so many of these attacking categories, and I thought, that's actually not as good a stat as people might think. Like, Mason Mount shouldn't be leading Chelsea in assists and Premier League goals and, like, I think passing to final. He shouldn't be. And that's not disrespect to him. It's more like that's an overdependence. If you look at the array of attacking riches in the Chelsea squad and Mount is the lead in those categories, it's like there's so many Chelsea players who haven't played to the level that they themselves would have liked, or who haven't played as many games as they would have liked, and Tuchel hasn't got that attack working, really.
It's a tricky one for Chelsea because I still think they'll finish third, but the gap is close and the run of form they're on is nowhere near as guaranteed as it was.
No. I think as well, do you know what, can I be honest with you as well? The team has not evolved. Obviously, they're off the field issues with the ownership. We've seen all that. But on the field, the team has not evolved. Like the signing of Lukaku, that was meant to be a thing that took Chelsea to another level, and it should have been. It hasn't worked.
There's some figuring out.
There is defensively, the wide areas, yeah.
But an amazing win for Everton.
Yes.
keeps it going, man. I mean, this relegation fight for that last spot is oh god.
People have suddenly decided they don't want to stay. They don't want to go down. They suddenly decided they don't want to go down. So let's see.
Yeah, I mean, Watford look all but relegated.
Yeah,
Norwich were relegated on the weekend. I just want to give a shout out quickly for Brighton.
Yes, impressive win.
That's the biggest. That's the biggest margin of defeat that Wolves have suffered this season from anyone, which goes to show.
What were the XG?
2.81 to 0.84. And that the will XG please gods. Graham Potter more than anything. That's three wins in their last five. Obviously, the draw to Southampton and defeat to Man City, the only two they haven't won. You mentioned City, they beat Leeds 4-0. And a good win for Palace against Southampton, and Villa obviously beating Norwich, which sent Norwich down, and Liverpool beating Newcastle 1-0 on Saturday at St James's, which is a good result for Liverpool because Newcastle is now, again, a really tough place to go to.
Yeah.
No, quick shout, Heung-Min Son's absolute goodness. Worldie for Spurs.
He can do that with either
Holy
foot.
Shit.
He can do that with either foot from that
this
distance.
This guy is so
He's
good.
Unbelievable. He's unbelievable.
I still think he's underrated.
He is underrated. Yeah. He is. This man would light up any forward line in the world. Well, and this is can I just say this about Spurs? I always felt Conte was catfishing us a little with that talk about the squad. Bentancur just coming in and running things. Like, oh no.
Two assists for Kulusevski.
Oh, they had a poor win. I was like, what? No, really. Yeah. No, I've said this at the time and I was like, these are two elite players who've come in and not just come in. Like, you know, like Luis Diaz has come at Liverpool. Arguably the only fit on the same level, the two fits are Bentancur and Kulusevski. Like they say so often you can't make signings in that window and get them to come in and contribute. They've been absolutely pivotal.
Kulusevski is equal sixth on the Premier League assist leaders this season.
Brilliant.
And he came in January.
He's brilliant.
Paul Pogba only on 9 assists, and I think didn't 6 of those come in the first
game?
Like four
in one game. Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Massive win for Spurs ahead of Arsenal, obviously. That race for the top four.
Massive
really
win for Arsenal
as well.
My goodness.
It was a big win for Arsenal. It was a tough watch though. It wasn't a great game. West Ham obviously falling again. Arsenal are really quite lucky at the moment in the sense of they're playing teams who, well, not all teams, but they had the Chelsea game, like I said. Chelsea maybe slightly lacking intensity. West Ham in between the two legs of their Europa League semi-final. It's kind of the perfect time you want to play West Ham, really. And Arsenal did make it difficult. And they are under strength. They've got a few key players missing, Arsenal. But I also think Arsenal were pretty fortunate, actually, because there was that Ramsdale one on Jarrod Bowen. And this goes to something we've talked about a little bit before, about just because you don't touch a player, it doesn't mean you don't impede them. If I was a West Ham fan, I'd be a little bit annoyed about that. But I don't know. It's one of those. I think it would also take quite a brave ref to send a keeper off there if there's no contact. I'm not entirely sure if it would have been completely correct, but I totally would have understood if something had happened to Ramsdale there. So I feel quite a lot of sympathy for West Ham fans who flagged that as a potential turning point.
Yeah.
I tweeted afterwards saying, you know, buckle up, because if Arsenal are going to finish top four, they're going to have to do it with four games that are very similar like this. It's going to be a little bit like, you know, Clockwork Orange, when it's just like,
yes,
you're going to watch this. You can't look away.
Very attritional, yeah.
Anything else you want to touch on in the Premier League?
No, I think we're all good. All good, yeah.
As you were at the top of Serie A.
Milan with a big win over Fiorentina.
Yes.
The way Fiorentina are playing.
They left it late.
Yeah, yeah.
Rafa Leao with a goal in the 82nd minute.
Napoli have left it too late. They got a great win over Sassuolo 6-1, but unfortunately, their goal gluts come a bit too late for their title chances, I fear.
Mm.
And Inter impressive over Udinese. Those teams have got a tough run in, actually, those couple. Actually, that's not, it's by no means sealed. So yeah, Serie A, exciting.
Yeah, it's tough for Venezia down the bottom. It looks like they're probably going to go down. They lost to Juve. But I was watching this game and I was figuring, I was like, why does this game look so weird to me? But I figured out it's rare that you see Juve play at home so early.
Okay. Oh, that's interesting. All right. Okay.
So it was a 12:30 local time kickoff. And I went back and looked and they've only done that once this season.
Oh, good spot.
And that's what it is.
Good spot, yeah.
Because I was like, why is this so weird? Why does this look so weird? And you're used to seeing the Allianz Stadium under floodlights.
Or like a nice Sunday afternoon, like a nice,
yeah, like a late, even like 6 p.m. kickoff,
yeah,
in the winter.
Exactly.
But all the floodlights,
yeah.
It's always floodlight.
Box office, yeah.
What else do we need to talk about? Bundesliga?
Yeah, just very quickly, I would say Bundesliga, a standing result for Freiburg beating Hoffenheim.
This game was great.
That's a great result for them.
Yeah, 4-3 for Freiburg, who maintain pressure on the top four spots. They are in fourth. We're recording this ahead of Leipzig's game this evening away at Gladbach.
We have to give a shout out to Köln as well, because they're sixth. And that's like, given what Köln have been through in recent seasons, that's an outstanding piece of coaching.
Listen,
we have to give the props there, don't we?
Doubt Stefan Baumgart at your fucking peril.
Who would, though? Who would?
When, as soon as Stefan Baumgart rocked up in a flat cap, I was just like,
it's done.
Shit is going down.
It's done.
When he was at Paderborn, he used to dress like he was a one-day cricketer. He looked like he was in like the IPL 2020 or something like that.
Got dressed in the club shop.
But it was just this really weird, it was like, is this a bowling shirt? Is this a one-day cricket shirt? He's rocked up at Köln and he's wearing his Rewe-sponsored...
Yes, the Rewe polo shirt.
The polo.
Yeah.
And he's had the flat cap on all season.
Is it slight energy of like Formula One engineer in his downtime? The slight energy of
Banger.
Like... Yeah, it's a slight energy of that, you know, like... But what I love is he conveys so much... authority. Like there are some coaches that have that aura of calm. His energy is like, I have this under control. Like I look at him and I'm like, this, does that make sense? Like you look at him and like, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. I think there are a lot of coaches around whose outward kind of projection of energy or intensity can sometimes mask quite a really smart tactical brain.
Yeah.
Baumgart's one of those people.
Yeah, but like, Conte has that too. Like every detail is taken advantage of.
That Baumgart side that Paderborn side that he took up to the Bundesliga,
they were a lovely team. They just didn't have goals.
Well, they had like a couple of their big players taken off them as soon as they went up.
Yeah.
And they just really struggled to score, like you mentioned a number of times. And the fact that they were even there, that is a very, like Paderborn is not a big club. Like, that's no disrespect, but they're 15, not, like, they don't have the
capacity.
Resources.
Yeah, yeah.
Moving to Köln, who, like Köln are a big club. They're a very big club in Germany. And they've really struggled recently. There have been a few cases of this in Germany. Werder Bremen obviously going down, looks like they're going to bounce back. Schalke the same. Schalke, Tedesco had them in the Champions League quarterfinals a few years ago and then they went down. But you've seen how difficult it's been for HSV to come back to the Bundesliga. A giant, like a Bundesliga giant. You have fucking Kaiserslautern, who are huge.
Going out of business potentially.
And they're in the third division.
Yeah.
The Bundesliga takes a lot of shit because of the dominance of Bayern. But there are so many other clubs and stories further down the Bundesliga, the Zweite Bundesliga, the Dritte Liga that are historically huge. It is not abnormal to see a side finish fifth one year in the Bundesliga and then like 11th, 12th, 13th, or go down actually. So I think for what Baumgart has done at Köln, that is...
It's remarkable.
As a big ranty...
No, I'm glad. I wanted you to go in because...
Ryan Munich in the Bundesliga.
Ryan Munich, the Bundesliga.
But, you know...
I'm glad you said that.
It's really easy for people to throw shade at the Bundesliga because of the Bayern thing and just call it the Farmers League and the Bundesliga tax and all of this shit. And actually, I think that's why people still really, really enjoy the leagues. We've joked about this before, but the Zweite Bundesliga is just the fucking most chaotic league in the world.
Sometimes I'm scared to check it for the blood pressure.
Yeah, for some reason. I don't know why, but whenever I check the Zweite Bundesliga specifically, my phone battery starts draining at a quicker rate than it does when I check any other league. It's really weird. I don't know what's going on there. But anyway, on that note, we should do a massive shout for Bochum. They're in 11th. They beat Dortmund at the Westfalenstadion 4-3 in a derby that's a derby in the sense that everyone has to put derby in inverted commas. It's technically a Revier derby, but the traditional big Revier derby is Schalke Dortmund. Maybe that means it'll hurt a little less for Dortmund, who weren't great at all. Hat-trick for Erling Haaland, though, two penalties and one that ricocheted off his shin. But the big thing about this game was the first start for 17-year-old Englishman Jamie Bynoe-Gittins, who was brilliant. And Marco Rose had a great quote about him afterwards saying that he gives us something we are lacking sometimes.
Where did he come from?
Man City. Same path as Jadon Sancho. Yeah. Quick shout for former Arsenal legend Takuma Asano to assist in this game for Bochum.
They were a team that was tipped to go down, actually, at the start of the season. So for them to be up there is so impressive.
Yep. And a quick shout for Mainz, Bo Svensson's Mainz. Spread a cool bow.
Hardly Brian, 3-1.
Problemhurst. Dan Rufemick and...
I mean, Bayern slightly with one foot on holiday, but still.
Felix Magath wasn't happy about this at all after the game. Hertha coach Felix Magath.
But there's always that frustration with coaches, isn't there, who've still got something to play for with other teams they see perhaps mailing in. And I do have a lot of sympathy for that. I do. You know, trying to keep yourself safe and stay up with meagre resources. Hertha don't have meagre resources. They don't. Yeah, they can't. If anyone can't really complain too much, it's probably Hertha.
Quick shout, there was Old Firm Derby as well on the weekend, another one. It's been like three in the last five games,
Celtic,
I think,
moving,
six games.
One or draw, Celtic moving a touch close to the title. But yeah, there's been a lot of Old Firm. But there's always always a lot of Old Firm.
All right, should we get out of here? We're going to be recording Tuesday night after Villarreal Liverpool.
Yes.
And we'll also touch on some of the Monday night games in that. We'll be recording Wednesday night after Real Madrid Manchester City. And then we'll be recording Friday morning to round up the Europa League Europa League and the Conference League semi-final second leg.
Do you know what? We said we're going to give them three stadios. We're giving them four. A quartet of stadios. Nobody asked for that.
Four straight stadios.
Four straight stadios.
Have that. All right, let's get out of here. I hope everyone stays safe, staying well. We'll be back, as we mentioned, probably too many times this week, but, you know, apologies. Make sure you check theringer.com/soccer and check the Stadio Outros plays on Spotify. Speaking of which, we are playing out on the Mrs. Misty version of Mellow Mellow. Ride on.
Mellow Mellow.
Early summer vibes. Let's roll out to this one, Musa, and you can let everyone know if there's anything you want to add.
I have nothing further. Just feeling mellow.
With the weather heating up, man, you need to heat up your takes.
Oh, I can do that. Believe.
Much love, everyone. We'll be back on Tuesday. Very, very late indeed.
See you then.